This episode is brought to you by Habit Aware. My Keen 2 brings awareness to my trichotillomania by giving my wrist a gentle hug or vibration when I'm doing the scanning behavior. Bring awareness into your life by visiting barbaralally.com/habitaware and use code LALLYLOVE for 10% off.
Hi, my name's Treja. I've been doing permanent makeup for a little over 7 years now. I've been in the beauty industry for about 17 years. At first, I just worked by myself, had a little space I was renting up here in Sonoma County in Northern California. And then 2 years ago, my business got busy enough that I wanted to start building a team to support my shop and to be able to grow. And I opened up 2 years ago, and I now have a team of 6 artists working under me. So my goal for that is to eventually be able to focus a little bit more on the paramedical end of my business. I really love the beauty work. I've, you know, done beauty for a very long time, but the paramedical work is really, really satisfying. And for me, paramedical work involves even things like my clients that have trichotillomania or alopecia or other things that cause it to be more than just like a straightforward beauty service. And so those are my goals that I'm working towards. And at this point, I have a really diverse clientele and I've addressed a lot of issues for a lot of people. And it's really exciting. It's one of the most fulfilling parts of my job.
So what led you to want to do this beauty work?
I fell into being a makeup and hair artist sort of by accident. I used to do it part-time as a hobby and when I was in my early 20s. And it was a hobby that just sort of grew and it tumbled. And I knew that working for myself would allow me a little bit of a more flexible schedule to be home with my children. I have 2 kids who are now adults, but I have 2 kids, and being able to take on work, you know, a couple days a week, working weekends, let me attend school events with them and be home a little bit more often. And I always just really loved it. Like, I was that kid in high school that did everyone's makeup for prom. And, you know, I was dyeing all my friends' hair in the bathroom, that kind of thing. So I really enjoyed it for a long time. I did weddings and events on the weekends, living in like Sonoma, Napa County. That's kind of a huge thing up here. And then being so close to the Bay Area, I also did a lot of advertising and a little bit of magazine editorial stuff here and there, a little bit of film here and there. And I really liked it, but it's long hours. It's a really long hour job. And when microblading first started to get popular 7 or 8 years ago, maybe even 9 years ago at this point, when it first started to get popular in the United States, I was following it because it was beauty industry related, right? I tried to be kind of on top of my field even then. And it looked really interesting. You know, I was spending my days putting eyebrows on people and I painted my eyebrows on every day from the time I started wearing makeup. So I thought maybe I would learn, do a day or two in a salon a week just to cut down on the time that I was driving to San Francisco and doing those longer commercial jobs. I was enjoying it, but a lot of what pays in that industry isn't what's artistically fulfilling. It's very straightforward, you know, really natural, really simple. Like, you're advertising a company that sells modems, right? Like, there's nothing fancy about that. So I was like, we'll do a day or two a week. And I really loved it. You know, when people would leave my shop from that, they were personally satisfied. A model doesn't care what you do to their face. An actor doesn't care what you do to the face, right? It's just part of the process for the end result. And so it was really awesome to have like that satisfaction of knowing I've made somebody's life easier. I've made somebody feel beautiful. I've made somebody be able to see themselves in a little bit of a different light. And so, you know, it started with microblading, and then I added a couple of other brow skills because microblading is actually a little bit limiting. Once I added the brow skills, I added a little more and added a little more until I was doing full face beauty. And in 2020, like January or February, I decided I was going to take the leap and I was going to jump in full time and only take other type of media jobs, you know, kind of when they came up, when the schedule worked out, because I was just really enjoying it. So I jumped in full time right before all those COVID shutdowns happened, but I haven't looked back. I kind of fully retired at that point with those COVID shutdowns and just stayed this route. And, you know, the more I learn and the more I do, the more like personal satisfaction I get out of it. And being able to work shorter days and not driving to the Bay Area for a 12-hour day after a 2-hour commute in each direction is also really nice.
I personally have trichotillomania, and I met one of your clients, Diana, who led me to you. And I was wondering,
she's awesome.
She is so great, and she had great things to say about you as well. I was wondering, when was the first time you maybe met a client who had trichotillomania?
On in my career. It's a condition that I was aware of, but nothing that I had researched too heavily. I didn't really understand it super in depth. And so, she put it on her consent form ahead of time that she had trichotillomania. So I kind of reached out to the online professional community just to get a little bit more information and make sure I had the knowledge under my belt to prepare for that. And I took her on, beautiful results. It worked out really, really well. And she's a friend, also had trichotillomania. And it sort of opened a door to this new clientele because I was able to, speak about it from a point of education to the extent that I have had to, turn a couple people away that weren't quite ready for the service yet. But being able to come from like that place of experience, it's sort of, that word of mouth recommendation really started to heavily happen for trichotillomania and also alopecia clients at the same time.
What would be the difference between someone who is coming in, they have traditional eyebrows, they're coming in, they would just like the beauty service versus someone with trich? Is there a lot of differences as far as professionally for you?
It can be. If they have been pulling for years and years and years, there's often scar tissue under the skin. And the scar tissue under the skin means the ink implants differently. And so I have to be able to work with scar tissue that I'm not seeing, both in for how that creates texture under the skin, and in for the way I have to ladle ink in so that it's gentle enough to stay where I put it versus. Like sometimes a scar can be really, really delicate and it can cause color to spread a little bit under the skin. Or sometimes it can be really, really fibrous and heavy, which makes it really difficult to get ink into the scar in the way that's going to stay. And a lot of the times, especially with trichotillomania, it's not scarring that you see on the surface, it's underneath that skin and you can feel it. And sometimes you don't even feel it until you start tattooing. So, really understanding how skin works, how scars work, and knowing like my technique as an artist, knowing that how my work comes back healed allows me to adjust for a client that does have trichotillomania. The second factor is just being really honest and open, both with the client and asking the client to do the same for themselves. Some people are at a point in their journey where knowing they have a 7 to 10 day deadline where they have to not pick in order to allow that healing is going to let the goal-oriented client get through that period, right? But for other clients, that constant awareness of the eyebrows and constant awareness of like, I can't touch that is going to make them want to touch more. So having enough knowledge about yourself and having a thorough enough consultation to make sure that they know they're ready for the service is the other part of that, where it's no longer just like a straightforward beauty service. And I feel like by the time people come to see me, most of the time they have thought that part through. I find my trichotillomania clients are very educated about themselves and are able to be really honest with themselves in some ways that like normal beauty clients aren't.
Walk me through the process. I'm going to reach out to you, and then what gets me to having the beautiful brows that I've always dreamed of?
So if you feel like you're super ready to go, we can just book you an appointment. But if you have questions, if you have concerns, we can always start with a complimentary consultation. I book free 30-minute spots where you can come in and we can just chat. If we jump straight into the service, we always start with a consultation anyhow so that we can kind of figure out exactly what it is that you want. But definitely step one is to have that conversation of, this is what your healing is going to look like. This is what it's going to feel like. This is literally what your skin is going to go through, what your body's going to go through. Is this going to work for you? We start absolutely with that conversation to make sure, yes, we're in a great place for this. Let's go ahead and move forward. And then once we get there, then it really comes down to aesthetics. We're going to look at the condition of your skin. We're going to look at what hair you do or don't have, and then talk about what you're doing every day. Are you putting makeup on every single day because you feel like you have to because you don't have hair or because you want that made up look, right? A lot of my trichotillomania clients are wearing a bit of a stronger brow because that's how it's easier to do it with makeup and not necessarily because they want to look like they have makeup on every day. So we talk about like that level of doneness. Do you want to look like you were just born with this brow, or do you want to kick it up a step or two and never have to even deal with your makeup pencil because you are perfectly polished with this like really groomed brow, right? Then we have that aesthetics conversation. And from there, we work together to talk about shape, arch, thickness, color, all of that. And we build your style and your aesthetic together so that when you leave, it feels like you and it feels like exactly what you want to be getting out of it. There's so much flexibility art is subjective, right? We all have different styles. We all have different tastes. So I'm going to give you what works with like your bone structure and your face. But within that, there's so much flexibility on what we do that it's really a collaborative that we work on together to get your final look.
How would you describe how it feels, the sensation of getting microbladed?
Really less than most people anticipate. There is lots of different ways to put eyebrows on. So microblading is the buzzword that everybody knows. Microblading specifically is drawing eyebrow hairs with a hand tool. That hand tool is made up of like a bunch of little needles all in a row. And you use that row of needles to sort of slice into the skin. It's a decent amount of trauma, creates beautiful results when we have healthy skin, but I don't offer it terribly often because there are better ways to get hair strokes. However, it's like rollerblading or Kleenex, right? Like it's the word that everyone says to mean that they just want to get good eyebrows. So when you microblade, it's got this like Velcro sound because those little needles kind of open and then they go ding, 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 ding as they close back together, right? So it's got this Velcro-y sound and a Velcro-y feeling. We numb you ahead of time. So that just kind of feels a little bit sharp, a little bit scratchy. My preferred method for hair strokes is actually using a tattoo machine with a single needle. So I very, very slowly draw it. And that creates a line by doing tiny, tiny little dots so close together that it's a line. This is a lot less trauma on the skin. That can feel a little bit stingy on that first pass. And then we have powder brows, which is softer shading all over. This can be really natural and subtle, or it can be a little bit more dramatic and look like makeup. That kind of feels scratchy. And that's just for the first pass. After the first pass, we put secondary numbing on. Secondary numbing is always going to work better because the skin is now open. So it can really penetrate. The ingredients are a little bit stronger. They kind of blanch the skin out so I can see my ink really well. And they might stop any tiny little bit of pinpoint bleeding or lymphatic fluid creation that comes up. After that, you feel almost nothing. It's for eyebrows specifically. It's pretty common for my clients to actually fall asleep as they go along. All you feel is like that little bit of pressure from me pushing on your face.
And how about the healing process?
Healing takes about a week topically. So your surface healing is about a week. You're going to leave and they're going to be one or two steps above what we want them to heal to. We got to have a little bit of room for fading. So they're just a smidge dark, but they're beautiful. The next day, as the healing process starts, the ink that's not going to stay in the skin starts to come to the surface as that skin begins to heal and separate. So your brows will actually get a shade darker. On this day, especially for someone that starts with very, very little hair, this can feel really intimidating. But it only lasts a day or two. So I try to emphasize that that's a very short-term part. And they still look beautiful. Like to anyone else, objectively, you just look like you got a real good brow that day. But to yourself, it can be like, oh my God, I woke up and there's so much eyebrow on my face, right? So for 2 days, you've got a bit of a strong brow. Then you're going to have a day or so where the color flakes off. If you have followed aftercare well, most of that is going to look like little fish food flakes just kind of coming off in pieces versus like a big scab. We don't ever want to see a big scab on the face. So you've got these little fish food flakes that come off. And when everything comes off, the brow is very, very light. It might even look like we didn't actually tattoo you at all. And it's two reasons that that happens. Deeper healing under the skin is still occurring. The surface has closed, but we still have a lot of under the skin healing that has to happen. And so all of the nutrients that heal the skin have flooded up there and they sort of hide your ink like a blanket. That's part one. Part two is that new skin sort of floats on top of the old skin until everything can knit together. So when it knits together, that's when you start to see that ink blooming up again. So right after that flaking, you're going to look really faded out. It might be patchy. It might look like we never did anything at all. And then over the next 4 to 6 weeks, that color is slowly going to bloom to the surface as that deep level healing happens. And around 6 weeks, we know what your skin actually held on to. And then we do a touch up at 8 weeks. So once the flaking happens, day 5, 6, 7, somewhere around there, you can go back to putting makeup on. You can go back to your normal routine. You can sweat again and swim again and all of those kinds of things. Because during that first week, you really want to keep them dry. You want to keep that heart rate a little lower. You want to keep the sweat down. So it's only 1 week where you're like actively engaged in not doing all of the things. And then we do it a second time, 8 weeks later, touch up any little details that need to happen. And then you're good to go for a couple of years.
Did you know Habit Aware also offers virtual peer coaching? This one-to-one peer-based program will coach you through shifting mindset, practicing healthy strategies, and creating your personal roadmap to recovery. To work with me, Ellen, or Anila, head over to habitaware.com/coaching today. Do you have any memories? And I don't know if you're even allowed to share details, but have you had people who have had emotional responses, not seeing eyebrows on their face for years, only now to see beautiful eyebrows? What was that like?
When people get emotional in my shop, I get emotional along with them. It's really just really heartwarming. I know that there's a lot of anxiety around, did I just touch my face and now half my eyebrow is gone? Do I look weird because today I couldn't get them to be the same shape? Or is the color too dark and is my pencil wrong? Like that can, I know how anxiety inducing that is for especially my trichotillomania clients. And knowing that the relief that's there when they come back, especially for the touch up, usually it's like they see it and it's beautiful and people love it, right? But it's when they come back for the touch up and they're like, I haven't had to think about my eyebrows in 2 months. And like just hearing the relief in their voice and the comfort that that brings them, knowing that they can just like wake up and go and not worry if someone delivers a package at 7 o'clock in the morning and they've just flown out of bed and they're like, do I look weird because there's nothing on my face? It just makes me so happy and it makes me want to cry like every time, like to be able to know that I've made somebody's life easier in that way and that it's going to stick with them. They're going to have brows for years and years to come and they're not going to have to think about it in the same way. And whether they go back to picking or whether it leads to, helps facilitate a little bit more of recovery, there's always something there and they don't have to worry about that, like that added level of whether they have eyebrows that week or not, or eyelashes that week or not. It makes me a little happy.
Yeah, it's an amazing thing that you're doing for the community, just any community, but also especially our community, where this is very important to us. And like you said, that relief, that's unheard of. If you weren't out here doing this, then like we would still be, suffering in a way that is every day, every second of every day. And now you're letting that go for us. So that's really great.
Yeah. And I feel like sometimes the eyelashes are almost more impactful than the eyebrows, even because if, someone has pulled out all of their eyelashes, I think it's harder to cover up than your eyebrows, right? Like eyebrows, they're so common in media right now that there's 7 million products to put your eyebrows on. But if you've pulled out all of your eyelashes, unless you're putting falsies on every single day, which some people can't do just because it's irritating and the glue is a lot for the skin, right? Eyeliner on in the same way can be just as like impactful, and it's really cool to be able to do that for people.
That was my next question. Do you do the tattooed eyeliner? And can you tell us about that?
Absolutely. We don't go all the way deep into the waterline, but we can get fully into where that lash line is and where the eyelashes grow out of. I do find that my trichotillomania clients for eyeliner need 3 sessions frequently and not just the 2. And I think it's because those lash follicles are so much larger that it's easier to develop a little bit of scar tissue in there. The color is a little bit harder to get in, especially when we want black. Like it's just harder to build up that saturation. But we can keep it really small just to a lash line enhancement, essentially, which is going to give you just that dark line where your eyelashes would grow. Or you can go bigger and, you've got all sorts of style options as far as like what a visible makeup style eyeliner is going to look like. We can't go as like full of color as you can with makeup. Like we avoid inner and outer corners because the tissue changes. We don't want to put anything where the tear duct is going to be. We don't want to get into that waterline because the skin is just not the same. It can't be tattooed there. But outside of that, you can create a really soft, beautiful look, top and bottom, that's going to replicate, that illusion of having the eyelashes or go bigger as far as like having a full eyeliner and full makeup on. I'm not sure if you saw Diana's, but she's got a pretty big eyeliner. She had to be a client of mine for a couple of years before I agreed to go that big, but she's got a big, gorgeous eyeliner as well.
What is the preparation to get your eyelids tattooed?
So eyeliner is a little bit more intense than the eyebrows. Eyebrows are like the easiest thing you can get tattooed. Again, I pre-numb you for the eyeliner. We get you as comfortable as we can, but most people are going to be a little bit twitchy. And even if they try to be totally relaxed, I still have like a vibrating machine by your eye. So the eye wants to twitch a little bit. That is totally okay. Most artists, including myself, tattoo eyeliner with the eye closed. I think that's a much nicer way to do it. There are a couple that prefer the eye open. Not my preference, but occasionally for the bottoms, it's one of the only ways you can get there depending on somebody's anatomy. But I tattoo you largely with your eyes closed. Most people do so that we're not seeing a needle come towards the eyeball. And we also sort of roll the eyelid up before we tattoo so that we have access to the lash line without it being so close to the eyeball. I know a lot of what makes people nervous about the eyeliner is that it is a needle right by your eyeball. But unless you like actively try to sit up while I'm tattooing you, the needle is never anywhere close to your eye. It's very safe. We know what our parameters are. We kind of go eyelash to eyelash, right? Like we don't go any further in or any further out than that because we know that that's the safe zone for tattooing for the color to not bleed out. And we make it as comfortable as we can. You know, I want your eye closed so that you are more relaxed and more comfortable. If you are a Latisse user or Grand Lash or any of those like stronger, intense eyelash serums, you do have to be off of them for at least 6 months. They can be very effective in making the eyelashes grow, but they do also make the eyelids very vascular. And because that eyelid skin is so thin, if it gets very vascular, your risk of the color blowing out and spreading under the skin goes higher. So I have my clients off of it for a minimum 6 months, and then we do an in-person consultation, especially with the really strong prescription ones. Some eyelids never recover. I have a client that was off of it for 6 years, and I still have to be really conservative in the eyeliner that I give her. Like, we can only go into her lash line because the lids are too vascular. So having healthy skin is step one, especially if you are in glue-on eyelash user, you want to make sure that the skin is really healthy. So I ask the no eyelashes for like 48 hours beforehand to make sure that the skin has a little bit of time to like push out any glue residue, make sure there's no tenderness, anything like that. And that's kind of it. You just want as healthy skin as possible. There's not a huge amount of prep or anything like that that has to go into it. If you have major eye allergies, allergy season might not be the best time to do your eyeliner. But outside of that, it's not really a big deal.
And what is the healing process like for eyelashes?
It's pretty much the same. Swelling in the first 48 hours is normal. If we just do a lash line, almost nobody swells. But if we're getting into this big shaded eyeliner that's got eyeshadow and eyeliner, swelling is going to be pretty common. So first 48 hours, most swelling is going to happen in the morning because when we lay flat, that eyelid skin is so thin that we end up puffy. You can use ice packs those days if necessary. Sleeping at a bit of an incline can also help so that it just helps gravity drain everything out, right, overnight. After that 48 hours, you're going to have a little bit of tenderness during the healing process. We do send you home with a healing ointment. If the skin feels tight, dry, itchy, you can put a little bit of ointment, but eyelids tend to be on the oilier side for people in general. And so we don't always need an ointment. Things can, you know, vary depending on where you live. Really humid places typically don't need any ointment in the eyeliner, whereas someplace that's really dry, your clients might be using it a little bit more often. We're in Northern California. I just, you know, if you need it, use it. If you don't need it, don't use it. We're kind of in the middle here, right? Eyelids are pretty easy. And then you're going to have that same flaking off like we talked about in eyebrows. You know, ideally, it's going to be tiny, tiny little pieces. We are tattooing, you know, really, really close down into that lash line. So you want to make sure that people aren't crunched to wash, right? You want to make sure that you're really getting all in nice and clean. Clean skin is always going to heal the best. And that's what's going to let us have those nice, tiny little flakes. And then it does that like fade out, bloom back in thing that the eyebrows do. However, it's not nearly as dramatic because typically we're using blacks and bolder colors and much fuller saturation. So it almost never goes away completely and then comes back. It'll just be a little bit lighter and then it'll settle back in.
Have you ever had a client where you maybe noticed, okay, missing eyelashes, missing eyebrows, and you brought up trichotillomania, or do most people bring it up to you first?
People bring it up to me first. I have asked. And the times that I have asked, it's been, they weren't diagnosed. You know, maybe they had an anxiety disorder and they're like, oh yeah, when I get anxious, I pull my hair. So they don't necessarily even have the word trichotillomania, but I'm like, okay, we need to treat you the same way. I'm not going to give you a diagnosis. I'm not going to tell you anything, but if you're nervous picking your hairs out, then we still have to have that same conversation. But that's really maybe only happened twice. Most of my clients, because I send out a really thorough medical form ahead of time. And people put all their information on there and they'll almost always bring it up to me because, you know, there's concern that they're going to heal well, that I know what I'm doing enough, which is great. That, you know, you need an educated client is going to be the best client. Yeah. Once in a while it's come up and I've never had anybody try to not tell me.
Yeah. Cause I wonder when I would go to the hair salon, I would often lie and be like, oh, I got gum stuck in my hair, but it's like, I'm bald. You know, like I have a bald spot. Like they know I'm lying. But I always wondered, like, if I had someone who said like, oh, hey, do you have trichotillomania? Like that probably would have put me at so much ease. Like I would feel so relaxed because I'm like, okay, you know what I'm going through. And it's not something you might think is like weird or strange.
Right. I try to talk about it on my social media. You know, I'm never going to out a client that doesn't want to be discussed, right? But I will talk about, you know, with a really close up is going through this. This is how we treated it differently. And I want people to know that I'm educated in addressing different types of skin conditions and different types of disorders, and that I can address your needs where you're at with you. And so because of that, I think that clients know to come to me, and that are they're a little bit more open with me because I've said it first. But no, if I see something, I definitely will ask.
So if somebody wanted to work with you, how would they get in contact with you?
That's my bookings through my website. That is my preferred way to do it because then you can see all of my availability. We have a booking page where you can book myself or any of my other artists. You also have the option on that website to book a complimentary consultation. I also have people contact me through Instagram or ideally text message because I'm faster at getting back to a text than I am client phone calls. But my preference is that clients book me directly online. I'm happy to help when that's not an option or when that's difficult for somebody, but that's the easiest way.
What advice or words of wisdom would you give somebody in the trichotillomania community who wants to have beauty cosmetic procedures?
I think the most important thing is to make sure that you are seeing an artist that has experience. Trichotillomania, anything along those lines where there, you know, like I said, there might be scar tissue under the skin. There's outlying factors. You don't want to go to an artist that's new. You need somebody that knows how their work heals in the skin, how their work heals in the skin long-term. And ideally, somebody that is already familiar with trichotillomania. You know, the last thing you would want is to go to a brand new artist who then may judge you for having an anxiety disorder that affects your appearance, right? You want somebody that's super knowledgeable, that's experienced, and that's going to make you feel welcome. The second factor is that you want to make sure somebody works in the style that you like. You know, my shop specializes in something that's really, really natural. There are other shops that specialize in something that's really, really strong and defined, or places that specialize in a really natural, but like very fluffy, almost boy brow style, right? So you want to make sure that you are picking somebody that does the type of art you want on your face, because you can be the most skilled artist in style A and just fall flat on style B. And also, you know, don't be afraid to travel to find that, especially if you live in a small town or maybe there's one or two artists. If they're not the style or education level of what you're comfortable with, go for a trip. You know, you're doing it two times. At first, you go once, 2 months apart. And then after that, you're only doing a single session touch up every 1 to 3 years, depending on how your body holds ink. Some things are worth traveling for. And largely just knowing that this is an option for people, you know, that like permanent cosmetics is a really, really viable option for people with trichotillomania, for people with alopecia, for people that are missing pigmentation, even, or anything like that, to bring you back to where you feel normal. And with that said, what makes you feel normal is the answer there. Nobody needs anything, right? If you are comfortable with your journey, with where you are, just because somebody else is like, I had permanent makeup and it was the answer for me, it doesn't necessarily mean it's the answer for you. But if you find yourself, you know, fighting with your eyebrow pencil and you just don't want to deal with it anymore, it could be the right answer. I think that it's really important to not feel like you have to do something ever. You know, there's a lot of power in embracing where you are at in your life and how your body just is, right? Let yourself be where you want to be. And if permanent makeup feels like it should be a good answer and like it's going to help you in your life, then pursue it. But don't ever feel like you need to do anything. Nobody ever needs to do anything. Thank you.